Well, thank you, Ted. Great to see so many people here. You might even think that something were happening. The central theme of what I'm going to say is that we are not simply spectators. We are not passive observers of events that are taking place at an elite level, and the job of socialists and revolutionaries is to intervene, to shape the outcome of the crisis which has been revealed by the European Union referendum result. The meeting is not centrally about the discussions around the European Union, but let me just in very brief form say what our analysis of that result was. The Socialist Workers' Party took the position of arguing for a leave vote from a left perspective, centrally because of two themes. One, that the European Union was an undemocratic enforcer of austerity across a continent, evidenced most clearly by the financial waterboarding and destruction of the Tsipras government in Greece when it tried to stand up against austerity. And secondly, because of Fortress Europe, the laws and policies which keep people out of the European Union and have led to the deaths of thousands of people in the Mediterranean, and have now been made even worse by the deal with Turkey to return refugees from Greece to one of the most undemocratic and brutal regimes in the world. Furthermore, we were against the TTIP deals and the general corporate control of the European Union. That's why we voted for leave, and therefore we were glad the vote was for leave. What did that vote reveal? Fundamentally, I would argue, the vote was, the central feature of that result was a revolt against the establishment, that people who are generally forgotten, ignored, or sneered at delivered a stunning blow against the people at the top of society. We agree with Diane Abbott, who described it as a roar of defiance against the Westminster elite. We agree with Jeremy Corbyn, who, despite arguing for a Remain vote, said that one clear message from last Thursday's vote is that millions of people feel shut out of a political and economic system that has let them down. And if you look at the analyses after the referendum, it's very clear. Look, for example, at what the difference between Remain and Leave voters is around a couple of questions. A small majority, and it is a small majority by the way, of those who voted to remain think that for most children growing up today, life will be better than it was for their parents. Leavers think the opposite by 61% to 39%. Leavers see more threats than opportunities to their standard of living from the way that the economy and society are changing. By 71% to 29%, they things are getting worse. That is not a fantasy for millions of people in Britain today. The reality is their lives are getting worse, and the lives of their children will be worse than their own. And therefore, the result centrally is a cry of rage against the people at the top of society, most marked in those areas which have suffered not just 8 years of economic crisis in the present spasm of capitalism, but 30 years of that from what Thatcher did and from which they have never recovered. Look at the vote in places like Doncaster. Look at the vote in places like the South Wales Valleys, and you will see people who have been spat upon from a great height for decades saw this as an opportunity to hit back. That's not the whole of the vote. Nobody can ignore that also part of the vote has been marked by racism and distaste at the fact that immigrants have been allowed into Britain. This is a reality. It can't be ignored. The fact that there have been racist attacks on individuals and property since the referendum cannot be ignored. But it's not the whole of the vote. It is not true that 17 million people across Britain are racists. Our task is to address the message that came out of that referendum, because it is clear that we need to unite after the referendum and to say, however you voted, we need a stronger current against austerity and against racism. And one comrade put it very well at a meeting I just went to, when he said, I ask people not how they voted, but what they voted for. It's not a bad way of putting it, in truth, because we recognise that many Remain voters did so for anti-racist reasons, because they were so sickened by the official Leave campaign by Farage and Johnson, and that many did it because they believed that this was the best way to protect workers' rights. We don't agree with that, but nonetheless we recognise that, and we therefore seek to unite with those people against racism. And one of the central messages of Marxism is that however you voted, it is now crucial for all of us to unite against racism in our communities, to demonstrate on the 16th of July against austerity and racism, and to make sure that there is no place for racism to grow, to defend the freedom of movement, to defend migrants and asylum seekers, and to make sure that we come out of this with a stronger anti-racist and anti-austerity movement, not one that is weaker because of the divisions of the referendum. I'll say as well that what has been revealed is it wasn't just an episodic campaign that showed the nature of racism in Britain. Racism in Britain had been whipped up by people at the top of society, whether they were on the Leave or the Remain side, not for a few weeks, but for years and for decades. And we need to call that out. It was Cameron who spoke about swarms of migrants, who called them a bunch of migrants. It was other people inside the Remain camp, as well as the Leave camp, who unleashed the most brutal scapegoating in order to deflect from their own crimes at the top of society. It was David Cameron who unleashed that foul campaign against Sadiq Khan, an Islamophobic campaign, in order to try and win the London mayoralty. And it's a much deeper question than simply the question of what happened around the referendum campaign. Now, one of the things we also have to recognise is that the referendum result has plunged the British ruling class into a deep crisis. Cameron has gone. We should celebrate. It is true, he is likely to be replaced by another Tory. That's likely in a Tory leadership election, unless, you know, there's Kent or someone. You know, it is likely. But look at the crisis they're in. Oh, Johnson is now going to be Prime Minister. He's not. Johnson is not going to be Prime Minister. And I noticed there's a beautiful article in the Financial Times which I could just read out today about the crisis they're in. But it quotes Frank-Walter Steinmeier, who's the German Foreign Minister, who they describe as exasperated, who says, the Tories have turned what was an inner party conflict into a full-blown state and government crisis. You cannot discern that anybody on the British Isles now has a plan of what to do. And then they talk to another senior British official from Brussels who say, people have compared this to the Suez Crisis, you know, that's the 1956 crisis in Egypt and so on. If only, he says, this is far, far worse. Cameron gave an interview a year ago in which he said the three things he would be remembered for were keeping Britain in the EU, halting Scottish independence, and repairing Britain's public finances. All three. So Britain's game is voted to leave the EU. The question of Scottish independence is now even more firmly, perhaps, on the agenda, with another referendum possible and a much greater likelihood of it being passed. And yesterday, of course, George Osborne retreated from what had been one of his central pledges, which was to achieve a surplus in the British finances by 2020, which would have meant immense austerity. Yesterday, just at the time as Gove was announcing his leadership campaign, he made a statement that he was giving up on this aim. And it's a big thing, actually. It's a very big thing that they once more had to back off from one of the central economic pledges that they have made. And do not believe that they are easily going to be able to come together again. I know Theresa May is now the candidate that seemed most likely to win, a brutal role as Home Secretary, and you know, a very nasty set of politics. One of the interesting things, all the political commentators say, oh, she has a great, tremendous asset. She was a lukewarm Remainer, a tremendous asset. Of course, this is why Jeremy Corbyn is absolutely impossible because he's a lukewarm Remainer. Manager Politariat have a great unanimity around this question. And even if there are apparently moves to try and keep Gove off the ballot paper now, that May is telling some of her supporters to support another candidate so that she gets more than them and keep Gove. It's a nasty world in the Conservative Party. But although that crisis exists, and it's very important because it will echo down the years in front of us, that's not enough just to watch and say that we can inevitably gain from it. Because we do know that there are crises which can be seized by the left and crises that can be seized by the right. And the right will seek to benefit from this crisis as well. I've already said the disgusting racist attacks that have happened, the attempts by fascists to organise. We know that during the campaign, Joe Cox was murdered by a Nazi, which was at least in part because of the way in which that campaign, the sorts of speeches that Farage made, but actually rested upon a much larger and more long-term racism inside British society ripped up from the top. And therefore, we have to say, what are we going to do about this? To impose a working class solution to the crisis. How is this going to be resolved in the interest of the vast majority rather than the tiny elite at the top of society who have just been rejected in that poll? And one of the ways that could be resolved, is by a much higher level of class struggle. It is regrettably true, however, that the level of class struggle in Britain, by means of strikes and protests and demonstrations and occupations and so on, remains very low, particularly the question of strikes. It's brilliant. Very, very important that next Tuesday in England there's a national teacher strike. Fantastic. Teachers, I'm sure, voted for Remain. This is a place where everybody, however you voted, we're all united against the people at the top of society. I know there's a row inside some sections of the NUT. This is a bad time to strike because it's a national emergency and so on. It's a bloody great time to strike. It's a great time to get weaker your opponents. That strike's really, really important. The strike of the junior doctors, the repeated strike, 8 strikes, wasn't it? Junior doctors were incredibly important. All the strikes that are taking place across the universities, well, nearly every day takes place in a different university somewhere, very, very important. And all the smaller strikes, we heard it, we had the opening rally from the National Museums Wales strikers, brilliant, and the National Gallery and the Pennine Foods, and I could go on about them. But the truth is, the general level of struggle is very, very low. And the reason for that is not because in general, people feel satisfied and happy about things. It is because the trade union leaders have failed to provide the focuses to fight back and to defeat people. And I could go through, I haven't got time to do it. Mark Thomas is doing a meeting on the state of the industrial struggle later on in this event. Chance after chance has been missed to do that. And what a contrast there is between the absolute weakness of the TUC and the trade union struggles against the anti-union laws in Britain and what has happened in France. In France, you see the potential that once a focus is given for people to fight back, an immense struggle is possible in society, which can begin to change the whole political atmosphere. And therefore, one of the things we have to do is to support all the strikes that are taking place, but to try and get more of them as well, and to coordinate them, and to raise the level of class struggle in Britain. Therefore, the work that United Resistance is doing in creating the networks around people, the work we're doing in our own workplaces, and the activity to pull together solidarity around those who are fighting back is incredibly important around that. But I also think this is a time when politics is absolutely central. Politics is always to the fore in revolutionaries' minds, but here it is an absolutely crucial thing. And here Jeremy Corbyn's struggle is, above all else, should be in the forefront of our minds. It's absolutely clear that a large section of the Parliamentary Labour Party, the MPs, never reconciled them to the fact that Corbyn had won the election. He'd won by 59.5%, a bigger percentage than any leader has done for decades in British political history. He had absolutely smashed the gruesome three candidates he was up against and had demonstrated a radical mood amongst a substantial section of people, particularly young people, in Britain. You know, the Labour right came up with this brilliant scheme. We will change the way the leader is elected. We'll sideline those nasty trade union leaders because they're too left-wing. And we'll open it up to the public. And they're all really very right-wing. So they'll vote for the most right-wing candidate. What a brilliant scheme. And of course, what they found out was that hundreds of thousands of people actually were far to the left. Not only of Tony Blair, but of Ed Miliband. And in their tens of thousands went to Jeremy Corbyn's rallies, paid their £3 to get a vote, and voted him in by overwhelming numbers. It was a cause of great celebration. It was less than a year ago now, wasn't it? That great day in September when Corbyn was elected and tens of thousands of people marched across Britain in support of refugees. It was a great day, very, very important to remember it, but they never reconciled themselves to it, these people, and they decided that they were going to get rid of him. The first opportunity was going to be electoral, that he would be a failure in the elections, they would lose all the by-elections. Regrettably for them, they won all the by-elections, sometimes by larger majorities, and then there would be the council elections, where they would absolutely show completely incapable of winning, and they'd lose all the mayor elections. They won all the mayor elections with bigger majorities, and although one shouldn't get carried away, in truth, by the council election results, they were good enough to show that Corbyn was certainly not someone who could be sidelined around this. And therefore they decided we will get rid of him after the EU referendum, where we will declare that he has been useless. And if you didn't think it was coordinated and strategised, read the Daily Telegraph, where Ben Riley Smith, Telegraph political correspondent, wrote on the 13th of June, that's 10 days before the referendum, Labour rebels are preparing to topple Corbyn after the referendum in a 24-hour media blitz by fanning the flames with front bench resignations and public criticism. They think the signatures needed to trigger a leadership race can be gathered within a day. And that's exactly what happened. Exactly what happened. Hilary Benn, that man who played a disgusting role during the Syria debates, should have been sacked then, by the way, for speaking in support of the Syrian bombing, started off a process whereby they all, in a serial fashion, resign. And not just the Blairites, by the way. Quite important. I know people often say the Blairites are turning against Gordon. It's not just Blairites. Gordon Brown is many things. He is not a Blairite. Remember the history. Remember the history. People like Andy Slaughter and Lisa Nandy are on the soft left, actually the harder left bit of the soft left, in truth. It's much broader than that. They decided that they were going to get him. And one of the interesting things is they clearly thought Corbyn would resign and they'd get rid of him. And he hasn't. And it's great that he hasn't. Yeah. Submit themselves to this horrible process known as an election. 60,000 people have joined the Labour Party in the last week. Think of that. That's not happening to us. My guess is a guess, right? It's a guess. 45,000 of those have joined in order to support Jeremy Corbyn. Might be more. But my guess is that's about 40%. So if they had problems before with what the electorate looked like, their problems now are far, far greater. So now, suddenly, they're not quite sure whether they're running a candidate. It might be. So it was Angela Eagle, who was described ever as an Angela Merkel-like figure. I've never seen as a huge accolade for them. And then Owen Smith. Now, be honest. Who had ever heard of Owen Smith before we started? Well, there's one. Well done. So, back on to breathe. Owen Smith. Owen Smith, who gave an interview a few months ago, said, "Jeremy is going to lead us into the 2020 election. He's the leader. He said very, very clear that he wants to take us into the next election. He won a stonking great majority. Jeremy is going to be taking us into the election in 2020, end of." Which is an important quote to about Owen Smith. But, you know, the only other thing notable about him is when Jeremy Corbyn said, "We're going to get rid of the benefits cap," he immediately stood up and said, "No, we're not going to get rid of the benefits cap. You know, we're going to keep benefits low for ordinary people." So the hashtag that now goes around is chicken coop. Because, you know, somehow they're not so sure. about coming forward. Will it be Angela Eagle? Will it be Owen Smith? Will it be someone else? And the truth is, if there is an election, I think a year ago I wasn't really sure whether Corbyn was going to live, but I'll say it now, Corbyn's probably going to win the election inside. And this is incredibly subversive. Incredibly subversive. Think about it. The whole history of the Labour Party has been the preeminence of the MPs, a party based on the idea that you get changed through Parliament, therefore privileges the MPs at the top of that party. Suddenly, there is a war to the death going on now between 81% of the MPs and the membership is supporting the leader of the party against the MPs. This opens up a completely different strategy and possibilities to that which existed before. Because it means that Corbyn has to look outside the MPs in order to make sure that he stays in office. And I hope he does stay. The worst possible bloody thing would be if he now decided to step down. I know it's Tom Watson in the papers today. He's going to hold another meeting with him to explain why he ought to step down. Tom Watson, piss off. Government. It's honestly being floated now. There are some people who are saying the good people in the Tories and these good Labour people, the ones who are against Corbyn and Boris, it's a time of great crisis. We need a national government. John McTernan is the voice of the Labour right, if you like, very successful man. He was Jim Murphy's spin doctor. Fantastically well in Scotland. His advice is to be followed in all respects. He's in favour. The Financial Times as well is saying that. You know, there's talk about this. We ought to have a national government. These are big things that are happening in Britain. And the position put forward, think how subversive it is. If Corbyn is removed by one means or another, I think 100,000 people leave the Labour Party, maybe more. It's a guess, right? But I think 100,000, particularly the newer people, the younger people inside it. If Corbyn wins, what are those 81% of MPs going to do? Oh, sorry, Jeremy, it was a mistake. And is he going to say that to them? Is he going to say that to them, by the way? Oh, don't worry about it, I didn't mind. I'm trying to slit my throat. These things happen. But seriously, think about this. In a few weeks, this is going to be resolved one way or another. I think it is highly possible that there will be a split in the Labour Party. Yeah. Maybe something like the SDP of the early 1980s, which was terrible, by the way. It delivered an election for Thatcher. But, you know, that's one possibility where the right goes off. Or if Corbyn is removed, there'll be a split to the left, which would be a very exciting possibility in British politics and will create something like Syriza in Britain. Now, these are big developments to which we have to align ourselves. And the first thing to say is we have to support Corbyn against the right, but we have to very much stress that the critical question of whether Corbyn survives or not will not be decided inside the Labour Party. It will be decided in the streets and the workplaces and the trade unions about people who organise to support Corbyn and take action on the streets. Every strike will strengthen Corbyn. Every protest will strengthen Corbyn. Every occupation will strengthen Corbyn. It was brilliant that thousands of people came out and demonstrated in Parliament Square last week, because people weren't just sitting on Facebook making comments about it. Thousands of people were there. And that was a tremendous celebration of the fact that there was going to be a struggle over this question. I mean, I'll return later to what we think about this, but it's quite clear that everyone has to get behind Corbyn. And it means, for example, that anyone thinking of standing in an election against the Labour Party should not do this without the most careful consideration, because it is not a central element of struggle at the moment to be running candidates against Labour candidates in by-elections or council elections or whatever. There was one in Haringey that's called this week, and quite rightly in my view, ourselves, the Socialist Party, and the RNC, the people who were decided the Trade Union Socialist Coalition, decided that it was completely the wrong time to run a candidate, and are not running a candidate in Haringey. It's the right thing to have done, and it's a general rule that we should apply at this time. But there will be this fallout, and we have to think about what we are going to say in the future around this. And that we will be much, much stronger if in this period we are the people who are supporting Corbyn and, for example, demanding that the trade union leaders, who so far, almost to a woman and a man, have been very good in saying they support Corbyn, must not back off. I mean, I don't know if you know the history of the 1930s. There's a man called George Lansbury, who was the most left-wing Labour leader until the present. In fact, he was probably to the left of Corbyn in some senses. Lansbury made a famous speech when he was Labour leader, for example, calling for the entire abolition of the army and the Royal Navy, and of turning battleships into educational cruises for children. Brutal speech at the Labour Party conference from Ernest Bevin, who was the leader of the TGWU, the Transport Workers Union, the giant union in Britain at the time. Once the trade union leaders turned on Lansbury, he was finished. He was finished. And actually, the only thing that could remove Jeremy Corbyn now, in my view, is a tap on the shoulder from Len McCluskey. Wouldn't even have to be done publicly. If Len McCluskey and maybe Dave Prentice or Tim Roach of the GMB went to him and said, "Jeremy, you're a wonderful man, but for the good of the party and the country and all that stuff," I think Corbyn would be finished. So we have to put pressure on our trade union leaders to say, keep supporting Corbyn, don't fall back from it, and in addition, our trade union must not give a penny to an MP or a councillor who has stabbed Jeremy Corbyn. This at the meeting last night with Dave Ward and Ian Hodson, and Dave Ward from the CW said she was absolutely right to say the union should not give a penny or any support to the people who have turned against Corbyn, and that's something we should run across the trade union movement. It's a very good thing to take forward. So what are the focuses that we need to concentrate on? There are three absolutely central things we have to do, as well as the teachers' strike next Tuesday, which is of the greatest importance, and everyone should be on the picket lines, everyone should get to the rallies, everyone should try and take their trade union banners, even if they're not teachers, to the rallies that are taking place. It will be the biggest show of anti-austerity feeling if we make those rallies into really powerful things. But the demonstration on the 16th of July is absolutely central. The demonstration called by Stand Up to Racism and the People's Assembly, a demonstration not just about racism, but against austerity as well. Why against the two? Because we have to speak to those millions of people across Britain who have contradictory consciousnesses. They hate the elite at the top of society. They voted against the EU partly because it was undemocratic and corporate controlled and felt precisely the sort of institution which is designed to keep people like them down. But there were elements of racism around the vote as well. And therefore we need to say against racism, but also against austerity. Against the scapegoating of migrants, but also against the attacks on the NHS. Against Islamophobia, but also against the fact that there is not a future for your kids and there isn't a proper house for you to live in and there isn't a sense that you are listened to inside society. And doing those two together is why that demonstration is about anti-racism, anti-austerity together. We all have to do it massively. We have to put thousands of people in to make sure that that demonstration is a success. The demonstration in Birmingham, the Tory Party conference. There is a Tory Party conference. But anyway, it's a great opportunity again to take that message of anti-racism and anti-austerity to Birmingham on the 2nd of October. And the Stand Up to Racism conference on the 8th of October is part of ensuring that Stand Up to Racism becomes a mass movement in British society. Brilliant work has been done. The convoys to Calais, for example, absolutely crucial work that people have done. People sometimes say, oh, it's just charity. It's not just charity. Direct aid to people in the most powerless circumstances is an incredibly important act of solidarity with vulnerable people, people that we are showing that we are on their side against the horrendous treatment from the French government, the British government, and the European Union. We are on your side. We regard you as sisters and brothers. Taking that direct aid over there is incredibly important. We want to build on it as well, though. We want broader than that to build the sense of anti-racism in Britain and to tear the head off the government that is implementing that racism and to say the real solution in Calais is to let all those people into Britain now. In school for September. We want that to be possible. And I see that the French government is saying, oh, now that you voted for Brexit, we're not going to stop people who want to come to Britain from Calais. Bloody wonderful. If that's what you're going to do, that's even better. We have to make Stand Up to Racism a real thing in workplaces, in communities, badges at work. Support refugees and migrants, all of these sorts of things are very, very important. So there's a programme of actions. There'll be many other things as well, but there's central ones that we want to build around. But I want to finish on the question of the Labour Party, because I know there's lots of people in Britain, you don't really have to know, 60,000 have joined the party, lots of people who think the first central question now is to join the Labour Party. And there's probably people in this room who are thinking, I quite like what that lot's saying, but actually, I'm going to join the Labour Party. And they might even say it. It's quite difficult sometimes. But, you know, it's a very real feeling at the moment. So I want to just spend the last 3 minutes talking about that. The first reason why I don't think that's the right thing to do is because, as I said before, what the Labour leadership crisis is demonstrating is that the crucial struggles take place outside Parliament. Even, you know, Labour Party people have to talk about this now. Corbyn cannot survive through the votes of the MPs. It's impossible. That's not where the struggle is. And there's a more general question that all of the key decisions in society are not taken in Parliament. They're taken by the people who own and control the means of production in society, the offices, the factories, the land and so on. These are the people who make the real decisions, whether a parliament decides one way or not. The second thing is the experience of Syriza in Greece. It was a year ago that at the opening rally, we all held up the sign saying, Ochi, no to austerity. And it was tremendous. The Greek people were rising in support of the Syriza government against the plans of the European Union. Within days, the Syriza government had done a deal to implement austerity more ruthless than that which had been proposed by their Tory predecessors. And now they are fighting in the streets, the riot police, using tear gas against people who are protesting over their pensions being taken away, and Syriza is herding refugees into detention camps. That is a terrible tragedy in less than a year. And it's not because Alexis Tsipras was an evil person. It's because that's not how you can really change society. You have to change society by mass movements, by the power of the working class, by building a movement at the base of society, not at the top of society. And the same issues that faced Syriza and Tsipras and faced Hollande in France will also face Jeremy Corbyn when it comes. And that's not to denigrate Corbyn or the left of the Labour Party, that's the reality. The third thing I want to talk about is the pressure to compromise, which is massive. Massive. There's a pressure to compromise on Corbyn right from the start. That's why he came out for a Remain vote, which was a tragedy, by the way. It would have transformed the whole campaign if Corbyn had been for a Leave vote. That's why he is probably going to give in to Len McCluskey and Tim Roach of the GMB and say that there will be a free vote on Trident, which will enable the Labour Party to have a position in support of Trident at the next election. And there's also a pressure on to give in over the freedom of movement. During the referendum campaign, it wasn't just UKIP and the Tories who came out against the freedom of movement of workers into Britain. It was also substantial sections of the Labour Party. Ed Borders, Tom Watson, but also the left. Len McCluskey raised this question towards the end of the campaign. And regrettably, John McDonnell raised this issue as well. The pressure to compromise is massive. Let's be clear, we are not going to compromise around that question. Every worker is welcome to come to Britain. Every child is here. Abolition of immigration controls. Our sisters and brothers are the working class people across the whole of the globe. And we welcome them here because immigration has been massively positive for Britain and the British working class movement. And for all of those reasons, the crucial question is not to join the Labour Party. It is to unite in struggle against racism and austerity. But it's also to say, at this time of crisis, and crisis is not going to go away, crisis is the new normal in politics at the moment. At this time of crisis, we need a stronger socialist presence, a stronger group of people who recognise the need to put socialist politics into all the battles that are taking place at the moment, and that means an independent socialist alternative to the Labour Party.